time of day. 10:08. The Sports Machine with Slim coming live from Concord, New Hampshire. It's voting day in some towns, cities. I think plenty of kids are out of school today for the voting stuff. I'm voting that this show today goes in a little bit of a different direction than usual, because I'm just going to kind of ignore what happened yesterday in both the Bruins and the Celtics games. Quite honestly, they weren't really worth our time and attention, if I'm just speaking truthfully. As much as I love the Boston Celtics, and as much as I this year loved watching the Bruins, yesterday was tough, man. I know Thomas Polk's going to come on and talk with us about the Bruins' loss last night. 5-1, they lose to St. Louis. I turned the game on for the first time with about 3:30 left in the first period. Come down after putting the kids to bed. And Jack Edwards says the Blues are some sort of ridiculous percentage winning when they have the lead at the end of the first quarter. I think he said something like St. Louis was 16-1-1 on the season. That's what I heard. I don't know if that stat's correct, but I was like, oh man, St. Louis, wow, they get up at the end of the first period, 16-1-1, cool. Cool, I'm glad. The Bruins were down 1-0 when I come in with 3 minutes, 30 seconds left. So I was like, good, this is a chance for the Bruins to battle back. We're going to. That's what we always do. The Bruins always battle back. But then like a few seconds later, there's a penalty on the Bruins. 3 minutes, 13 seconds. I think it was on Charlie Coyle. Then 2 minutes and 11 seconds left. So just a minute later, there's a second penalty on the Bruins. Trent Frederick gets called for a high stick. So now it's going to be 5-on-3 for like a full minute and change. Or no, it's not, because St. Louis wins the faceoff, and within 10 seconds left later, it's 2 minutes and 1 second left, they score. So now they're up 2-0. And they're still on the penalty for another power play for another minute or so. What are you going to do? Sometimes it's just not your day. And yesterday was not the Bruins' day or night as they go down 4-0 and then ultimately final score 5-1. And you can take from that game what you will. I look at the two previous games when we beat up on Pittsburgh, what was it, 5-1? And the game before that I went to watch was against Toronto, right? Where we beat up on them 4-1, I think. So two games in a row, the Bruins had smashed. And then yesterday, we get smashed. But I just know for that second goal, there was nothing that could be done by Swayman. It was 5-on-3. And, I mean, there's nothing anybody could have possibly done. And the Bruins, there wasn't much they could have done differently, honestly. And I guess the first goal that St. Louis had scored, too, was luck. I thought they said the puck took a redirection off a kick plate or something like that. So just went into the boards, spit out somewhere, and bingo, they're up. So just not the Bruins' day. That doesn't matter to me. You don't want to come out every single night. You can't come out every single night in the NHL, in any professional sport, and just be automatic every single night. So last was the night. Okay, let's put that one behind us. I'll talk more with Thomas in the second segment, see what he thinks. With the Celtics, I'll read you right from my notebook. I mean, this is what the last thing I wrote before I went to bed, because we play last night at Portland, so the game tips off at, what, 10? And tonight we play against Utah Jazz. So it's another 10 o'clock game. I might stay up to watch some of it to tell you people, but I might not. And here's part of the reason why. I just looked at the box score for the Celtics game. Last night, the Celtics had 3 turnovers in the game. In the whole game. And I'm not talking one player. 3 turnovers. I mean, maybe I saw something wrong here too. But I'm looking at the box score. 3 turnovers for an entire team in 48 minutes? I'm sorry. That's not a game worth watching. Because the team on the other side, Portland, like, they're not even trying. I'm not kidding. Like, I could go out there and play defense with 4 of my buddies, and we'll force the other team into having more than 3 turnovers. Just out of sheer luck, because they're, you know, the other team's trying to do highlight, reverse windmill, alley-oop dunks, and we get in there and break it up somehow. Come on, 3 turnovers, that just tells me, non-competitive. I wrote last night, we're so deep, we're just so much better than the bad teams. And as the season finishes out for the Celtics here, it is going to be a little bit of warning time. I'm going to tell you something, because you build habits during easy games that are not necessarily good habits. To note, the Celtics win last night 121-99 at Portland. And I look at the box score because I didn't watch all the game. I went to bed. I knew it wasn't worth staying up. I think I stayed up halftime. It was 66-52, the Celtics. That's right. I stayed up to watch that much. And I'm like, what are we doing? I'm going to bed. We're just so much better than this team. They're not coming back. The only way they come back is if they just get totally lucky and the Celtics are like, yeah, whatever. Go ahead. You guys can win. The box score at the end, though, I see Jaylen Brown, 27 points. Again, we've been talking about how money he's been since the All-Star game. Leads the team 27 points. So I look at the box score, 13-29 from the field. 29 shots. Wow. Just like Dave said the other day, if you're going to be giving this many shots to Jaylen Brown, you kind of got to be giving him the ball at the end of the game if we're in a close game. You just do. He's your primary offensive option at this point. He's taking the most shots every game. The habit I'm discussing earlier is from the three-point line. Do you know what Jaylen Brown was last night? So he's 13-29 from the field overall. From the three-point line, he's 1-for-8. Jaylen Brown 1-for-8 from the three-point line. So he was 12-for-21 inside the arc, which is what, like close to 60%. Three-pointers 1-for-8. And I look at Jason Tatum, who had 26 points on 9-of-23 from the field. Not too hot. 2-for-8 from three-point line. So Tatum and Brown last night combined to go 3-for-16. Celtics win by 22, so nobody cares. Okay? But this is building a habit. Jaylen Brown, if you're 1-for-7 in a playoff game from three-point line, I'm sorry, I don't care if you're wide open and nobody's within 10 feet of you and you're all yelling, shoot it, go ahead. You don't shoot. When you're 1-for-7 from the three-point line, you don't take the eighth one. You don't deserve it. The other guys on the team are working too hard. It's a slap in their face. It's disrespectful to just catch the ball and just like, I'm just going to jack it up again. You know why? Because he's not that good of a three-point shooter. That's the number one reason. If it's Steph Curry, your whole team wants you to shoot the eighth one. You're Jaylen Brown. And I'm generally a positive guy, and there's plenty to be positive about with the Celtics team. But I'm concerned about the messaging in the locker room when you have Jaylen Brown shooting that many three-pointers. I don't want to see it. Don't play him that many minutes, Missoula. You got a game tonight. It was back-to-back. Sit him down. There's other guys that are going to play harder, that are going to make decisions, good decisions, and you are going to win. I love me some Brissett, O'Shea Brissett. I love watching that guy play. As soon as I turn the TV on, just a couple minutes into the game, I'm like, oh, he's out there. Nice, dude. He plays hard. We would have won with him out there. Jaylen Brown don't need to be out there shooting 8 threes in a game that you win by 22. I'm sorry. It's bad habit forming, and I better not see it tonight or tomorrow. We're going to be talking a lot, and I'm going to be criticizing Missoula. And people can say, oh, you're picking, you know, you're just looking for the weak spot negatives. No, this is what's happened over the last 5 years. The Celtics, when you get in the playoffs, when you get in these big games, they have a tendency to crumble. Like, how can we say otherwise? They just do. Look at the most recent games, though, especially the one against Cleveland just last week when I talked, we're up by 5 points with 3 minutes left. And then everybody was worried. Who's going to shoot? What are we doing? Do I shoot a three? Because I'm open, because I shoot threes all the time. That's the whole point behind the Celtics offense, right? It's all based around the threes. We have incredible three-point shooters. Derek White is nuts. Jrue Holiday is the best corner three-point shooter in the NBA by a wide margin. It's like 60-something percent he hits. We know Tatum loves to shoot the three. Heck, Al Horford shoots the three. Porzingis shoots a three from 5 yards behind the three-point line. And I'm fine with it all until it comes time for the big game in the playoffs against a good defensive team like Miami, who's had our number in the past. And we've come up soft. We need Jaylen Brown focused on getting to the rim. Don't fall into this habit of shooting threes and taking 8 threes, and it's cool because we won by 22 points, dude. That's going to be playing right into the hands of the Miami Heat if we play them. And I You have to think you're going to play the Heat. And I know Celtics fans, we're confident. I'm confident we can beat the Heat. We're better than them. We're just much better than them. But when the playoffs come, it's different. And the NBA is kind of fun to watch in the regular season, and they're getting up and down in the All-Star game. But when you got a game where there's three turnovers for a team, like, they're just showing up and playing, dude. Nobody's playing hard. Don't fall into a pattern. Don't give in to that, Celtics. This is the Sports Machine with Slim. We're off to a rocking and rolling start. We'll be back with Thomas Polk after the break here. WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, New Hampshire, talkradio.com. Welcome back, everybody. The Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio. Talked about the Celtics there, and I'll have a little bit more about them on, a hot take to lead off segment three. But let's talk Bruins here. Segment two with our local licensed health insurance and Medicare broker, Thomas Polk. Welcome to the show on a Tuesday, Thomas.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, as always, I will say, a little bit of a boring day, I think, today. When you come off of these types of games, the Celtics and the NBA are just like, there's no effort over there as far as I'm concerned, so it's almost not even worth talking. The Bruins, I do feel, gave some effort, but it's tough to have an opinion when you lose 5-1 other than something negative, but I refuse to be negative about this team.
Oh, they had a tough game. I mean, look back at the last 10, 15 games before that, they had good wins. They had tight ones. And yeah, they might have lost here or there in an overtime or a shootout. But overall, they played really good hockey. Every now and then, you got to give them a chance to have one of those games as well, because they don't have many.
Yeah, they had the one, I think, 2 weeks back against the Islanders, wasn't it? Just 5-0, and you could tell the effort wasn't totally there in that game, whatever. Like you said, sometimes, and I'm cool with it. Are those scheduled, Thomas, because you played in the NHL for 5 years and played all this other hockey. Like, are there certain games you think where coaches, do they kind of tell the team almost like, hey, go get them, but take it easy out there? Is it almost like a scheduled loss?
I don't think so. I mean, I've never seen it. I don't think they do the same. But like you said, this is a long season with a lot of hockey games. You just can't be at your best every time. I mean, they are human, and that's going to happen eventually to every team out there. But, they've been good all year. Again, it's happened a couple of games now out of what? Close to 60, 64 where
exactly.
We're at.
Yeah.
So, it is okay. I think sometimes it's just going to look the other way and go, hey, that was not nice, so go get him next time.
Did you see the first goal? Because I didn't. I thought I heard Jack Edwards say something like the puck redirected off the kick plate or something like that. Did you see it was a fluke goal, the first one?
I mean, with all the hockey goals out there, like fluke, no fluke, right? These goaltenders, these defense scores are so good these days. We almost see a goal like that every game. It hits off of three shin pads and goes in. That's just the way it goes, But overall, they just didn't have anything to hold back against them. And then you're down 4-0. You're coming out. They actually get to make it 4-1 right there off a pasta shot. It's one of those things. There wasn't any gas left in the tank for them to come back in this game. And, what's the last, call it 10 minutes there, you could just tell they were done with it. They just wanted to get it over with.
Yeah, and what about the goal that we scored, which was an amazing play by Brazo, who a lot of people are calling Brazzers online. I love this dude. This is the guy we brought up from Providence, right? I think he's 26 years old, first time he played in the NHL. He had scored a goal in his first game a month or so back. He's a big dude, physical presence, and he just was pushing the envelope down, keeping the puck in their zone. He fought, causes ultimately a turnover. They get it back to him. He pops the goal in on a sick, crazy, soft over-the-top goal, but It was taken off the board, Thomas. I think it was 2-1 at that. 2-0, I'm sorry, at that time. It might have been 3-0, but I thought it was 2-0. But they went back to instant replay and reviewed and saw that, oh, maybe he was offside. What did you think about all that? That's definitely the worst rule in all of sports. That is so dumb that it's a minute earlier and they go back, rewind, and they take the goal off the board.
Well, that's the thing with it, right? The league was trying to come up with rules and making it like, is it offside or isn't it offside? Obviously, for the referees right at the time, it's so hard to tell. Like, the game is super fast. They're so close. You're not going to see, like, a quarter of an inch. Is he over? Is he not over, right? So when they decided they're going to let the coaches challenge it, yeah, it goes back to whenever the play happened. Could they make some tweaks to the rule? I'd hope so, because it happens almost every game now where we're looking at one of those goals, right? So it's a little bit of a, well, it does happen, but then where do you draw the line? Is it okay 5 seconds after it happened, or is it okay 2 minutes after it happened? At what point, or should there be a referee in the stands that quickly reviews it, and if something happens, just hit the button, hit the buzzer and stop the game, rewind to 10 seconds and start over. There's no need to waste all this time, right?
This,
I mean, the technology is there. They could easily do that.
It is. The technology was leading me into my point, Thomas, is, and I know Michael Felger said this on 98.5 a bunch of times, like, the nerds are killing our sports. Like, I don't want there to be any instant replay on that call. Offsides in NHL, listen, it's human error. Those referees are paid. It's their job to do the best that they can. If they miss something within a fraction of the inch, so what? The totality of time that is wasted by us sports fans having to sit and watch these instant replays, it does not add to the enjoyment of our game at all. In fact, it detracts from the enjoyment of all these sporting events. I'm so done with all the instant replay stuff. But that in hockey last night, Jack Edwards and was saying that Torey Krug actually was the one who pulled the puck into the zone so that it should not have been offsides. And he was bewildered by the fact that the replay came in and said it was offsides. Did you have an opinion on that?
Well, that's the thing. And that's the hardest, I think, for the fans to look at. Sometimes you're looking at, obviously, 50% of the rink is going to love the call and the other 50% is not going to like it, right? That's just the way it goes. It goes your way, you're happy with it. It doesn't go your way, you're not happy with it.
I'm not happy with it, Thomas.
Yeah, and I hear you. I'm a big believer in all that stuff. We need to change the rule, whatever they see fit for the fans. On the other hand, Where is the rule? Sometimes, and I look at it less with the offside call, more with like the goals disallowed and goalie interference.
Yep.
It's really hard to look at it. And even if you have so-called expert former players looking at, like, I have no guess on what the player department is going to make for a decision. Sometimes it goes this way and sometimes it goes the other way. There's no clear-cut line kind of where you know. And you see the coaches react to it all the time where they go, well, how is it a goal today, but it wasn't a goal yesterday? And, you know, if they are kind of confused, then there's something definitely that needs to be worked on.
Yeah.
As far as the rules there with the offside, it's hard. I mean, I get arguments both ways. I also look at it. If we look at statistically speaking, right, it happens to every team. Every team has to, you know, forfeit a goal on offside, and every team gets a goal every now and offside if we just take the rule out and just let them play. Like you said, let the refs make the decision. It works for, call it, 85 years of the NHL before we started doing it. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all in the same boat, right? Every now and then it's going to go your way. Every now and then it's not going to go your way. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, it's the insanity of saying we're going to do this instant replay and take all this time to review stuff, and then they still get the calls wrong, which happens all the time in football. And that's why it's just like, how many hours of my life have been wasted on these reviews and challenges and the play calls when if we just took them all away, it would be fine. Like you said, it was fine. It would be even better for all of us. More enjoyment, more reason to be blaming the refs and this stuff, why our team lost and all that stuff. So let's transition out of my negative state there, Thomas, and say, how important do you think home ice is to the Boston Bruins and their chances to get to like the Stanley Cup Finals this year?
Well, I think it's important for any team, but not so much for the actual game as far as more the travel. I think if you can save yourself that one extra trip, and if we look at, you know, years past, if you're going to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, you're going to win the Cup, there's at least a couple of times where you're going to go to Game 7, right? So if you don't have to travel those, I think that's the biggest benefit. Hey, you get to sleep in your own bed. You get to be in your own house, cook your own meals. You don't have to go to restaurants. You're not sitting in the hotel room. I think that's the more and bigger benefit rather than the home ice advantage. Obviously, you know, a town like Boston has awesome fans, different crowds than some of the other cities. That helps too, but I think it's more the for the players, more the travel aspect. If you can save yourself that extra trip a couple times, sometimes even three, you know, along the way, I think that's what helps the most.
Interesting. And what about being around the home, like, ice area and listening to the media and stuff like that, like the fans, does that increase your, I don't know, belief that you can win? Like, if you come off a Game 7 win and then you know you're hosting Game 1 of the next series, you're in town for, like you said, 3-4 days getting ready for that next series sometimes. Maybe you feel the positive energy of the city as you're walking around.
100%. As I said, like, guys like being home, you know? I mean, you look at the Bruins roster, I don't know what it's made up, but a lot of them have families, wives, children. Like, they want to be home and get their, you know, personal time and spend it with their family rather than being in some other city where they just hang around the hotel or go for walks. And it gets old after a little while, you know? The season's already been long enough. So for the guys to be home, again, be in their own apartment, be in their own house, sleep in their own bed, I think it makes a difference.
Thomas, yeah, I hadn't thought about that at all. So where do things go? The Florida Panthers, as we head towards commercial, are we racing to try and get them for that number one seed in the Eastern Conference? Is that where we go? We go all out, or we say, hey, it doesn't really matter in that finals if we match up the Eastern Conference against Florida?
Well, I think that the big part there is you got to go in with the mindset for every game for the rest of the year. Like, we need to win this. Right, we want to put ourselves in the best possible spot, but also have a good feeling going into the playoffs. So you don't want to play the next 10 games awesome and then the last five lose all of them and then go into the playoffs. So, I mean, it'll be a tight race. We're only 1 point behind them, but they have 2 games in hand. You want to go out there and do well, especially. And I'm not even sure if we'll play them again. You want to play well against them. I mean, if you just look at statistics stuff, hey, I'll take the Maple Leafs in the first round. They've been dominating them this year for all 4 games. So, yeah, statistically speaking, they are the team. But, you know, you always want to be careful asking for it.
Let's get them, everybody. Thank you, Thomas, for a dose of positivity. We'll be back here after the break to talk some NFL action. The Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back to the Sports Machine with Slim. I think Thomas Pope does such a great job. When you're talking about home ice advantage in hockey, I'm thinking about, like, you know, the rink, the comfortability of playing in the space you know best, the home fans giving you the juice. I mean, that's my number one thing. But he's talking about, hey, wait a minute. You win a series, you know you're hosting the next game. So if you clinch it at home, if you got the best record, you got home ice, you know you're going to have won the clincher at home, and then, boom, we're waiting until game one. And that time in between to not have to travel, there's something to be said for that. I mean, you don't want to get comfortable, obviously. I didn't go next level with him on that topic. You don't want guys to be like, oh, hey, I'm around friends and family, and hey, let's go out and hang out and party and stuff, in a few days break. But there's something to be said for, dude, staying focused. Let's go. We're feeling good. We're at home. This is where we're going to be. Let's bring a title to this region. And that's what the Bruins are going to try to do. And I really feel good about their chances this year. I've talked it all the way through. Let's – my hot take on the Celtics before we get into the NFL. Last night, going to a commercial break in the first half, I wrote this down. Peyton Pritchard needs to be the leader of the team. And – everybody be like, what, Peyton Pritchard? But I'm going to tell you, going into this timeout, he was saying something to Tatum, and I think he was kind of correcting Tatum on something that he did or didn't do. And you could see Tatum was like, and then he turned and he just kind of shrugged, you know, his face, that he didn't agree with what Pritchard had said. And I'm just like, you know something, I should mention this on the show tomorrow, because I'm telling you, anybody that watches basketball, if you're a Celtics fan, if you're watching any of these games, you know you agree with me. Like, Peyton Pritchard is the perfect player as far as effort goes. he plays the game the right way. He makes the right decisions. He plays with the appropriate amount of energy and effort. And you just can't ask any more from the guy, ultimately, is where I'm coming from. And you know, if he was saying something to Tatum, Pritchard right, Tatum wrong. Come on. Let's just be realistic. Peyton Pritchard knows how to play the game of basketball. If he had Jason Tatum's talent and ability, how good would that guy be? I mean, I was texting with my buddies over the weekend saying, you know, if Anthony Edwards, how incredible that dude is in Minnesota. Like, if Jason Tatum played with Anthony Edwards' desire and like, focus and hustle, oh, my God, how good would Tatum be? Instead, Anthony Edwards is going to be the best. Like, this guy is going to be unstoppable in the next year or two. As soon as he learns to shoot threes. It was like Michael Jordan, his first couple of years in the league. He couldn't shoot threes. People don't remember that. That was all the talk. And then he figured out, he put the time in and got a three-pointer that, you know, was near the top of the league percentage-wise. And that's when things took off, when guys had to guard you from three. Right now, Anthony Edwards, you don't have to guard him from three. You leave him open. But that will change. NFL. You know what else is going to change in the NFL? Kirk Cousins. And the best thing I saw today on the internet, what's the best thing you saw on the internet today, Slam? Kirk Cousins, his clutch. I should look up the article on ESPN. I'm like, listen, who was this written by AI? Or is this, like, was this written just by computers? Or did some clown actually, like, pen this themselves to say that Kirk Cousins is clutch? That was the point of this one paragraph. And anybody who follows the NFL, we know it was primetime games. Kirk Cousins had lost like 15 in a row. Literally. Monday night football games, Sunday night, Thursday night. Kirk Cousins had lost, like, it was definitely double digits in a row. And it had been a big thing. And he was so clutch that he, like, wasn't able to win the next one. You know, for time and time and time again. Yet, that's the justification, I guess. Kirk Cousins now is somewhat clutch. That's the justification. He gets a four-year, $180 million contract from the Atlanta Falcons. Are you kidding me? Kirk Cousins? Atlanta. Dude, this Arthur Blank, like, this is what's wrong with these rich people in this country. Think they can just go around and throw money, and they have no clue what they're doing, and just, like, putting any solution in front of them, like, okay, there we go. You know, because they're just focused on having so much money that it really doesn't matter. You know, when you have that much money, it doesn't matter what bad decisions you make. You can do it on a hobby. You can just spend a little bits of money over here and over there and sprinkle it around and feel good about yourself. But you don't know how to build a winning business. And that's the Atlanta Falcons. Have a ton of talent. And you're going to go out and give Kirk Cousins a four-year, $180 million contract. Unbelievable. Unbelievable that he gets that amount of money. It's really sad. It's sad that this country has gone to that level where we as fans, this is our favorite thing, and we have mediocre players that get signed to that amount of money, so then us fans have to go and pay that much more to go sit in the seats at these games and cheer the fans on and cheer the players on, right? And then we get priced out of being able to go to the games, so the only people that can buy the tickets are the big businesses. So the big businesses give the tickets away to their employees for free, so the people that are going to the games don't even care about the teams. And that's what you have showing up for, like, the Celtics in the playoffs against the Golden State Warriors when we were in the finals. That's why I talk about Game 4. Those fans did not know how to cheer. They were not there to root on a team that actually would, if we had won that game, we would have won the title against Golden State Warriors. And that's the energy I brought last week to the TD Garden when I watched the Bruins play against Toronto. These fans, they think they're real fans, but they're not. They're fans that got tickets for free. And they don't know how to cheer. And they're not hungry. They don't care if the team loses. That's ultimately it. On the positive, what I will tell you people is Minnesota has two of the best receivers in football. Okay? There ain't no way in heck they're going into this season with Sam Darnold as their starting quarterback, who they just signed to a one-year contract. So I looked this morning. Minnesota Vikings have the 11th pick in the first round. Here's what I'm telling you. Minnesota will trade up for a quarterback. Write that down. Minnesota will trade up in the draft to get one of those top three quarterbacks. I'm saying it. And maybe the Patriots will trade back because that's what they've done for years. Maybe it's Belichick, you know, has just inflicted us with that line of thinking. And so we're going to move back. But Minnesota's going to overpay for a quarterback. They have to. You can't go into the season with the receiving core that they have and the competitors that they have there on that offense and tell those guys, hey, guys, this is going to be a bridge year. Like, you know, it's all right if we lose this year. That it is not all right if you lose this year. That's not going to go over well with these guys. Justin Jefferson. He's a competitor. You watch the guy. He wants to win. The Jordan Addison guy. He wants to win. These guys have talent. They need a quarterback to throw the ball to them. You tell me, are they happy with Sam Darnold throwing them the ball? Or do they want a guy like Jaden Daniels throwing them the ball? Because I'm here to tell you, they want Jaden Daniels throwing them the ball. And if those guys go into the season unhappy, first of all, your coach is going to get fired. Kevin O'Connell, who I think has done a pretty darn good job in Minnesota. You're going to get fired, dude. You try pulling the Patriots act, going in with no quarterback to start this season, you are going to get fired. Things are going to break down totally. He knows that. That's not going to happen. They are going to trade. They're going to either trade to Washington, Chicago, or the Patriots. Maybe they're working with Chicago, who's in their own division, which makes you think, well, they're probably not going to try and help, you know, deal with each other. There's just an aversion to doing that. But Justin Fields is out there. And maybe Minnesota goes, hey, Chicago, we'll give you this number 11 pick for Justin Fields. Who says no? Because if I'm Minnesota, yeah, I'll take Justin Fields. You guys want to go with Caleb Williams? Go ahead. Right? This would be a dupe trade of all time for Minnesota to get Justin Fields and have the Chicago Bears turn the reins over to Caleb Williams. Just total flop. Like, that's what's going to happen. It's going to happen. Caleb Williams is not going to be a successful NFL quarterback. That's another hot take for me. It's a no-brainer. And right now he's 1,200, minus 1,200 to win 100 on Caleb Williams to be the first pick overall in the draft. Jaden Daniels is down to 750. So, I don't know. Saquon Barkley to Philadelphia? What do we think about that? You're dead to me, Saquon. This is The Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio. We'll be back to talk college basketball and some conference tournament picks from my brother Dave. WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. You're doing it right. NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. Segment 4. It flies by for me, I'll tell you right now. Sports Machine with Slim. Coming back from commercial. We got my brother Dave on the line. He's been pretty rock solid with his picks. I'm going to tell you what, people, so get your pens out. Might want to write some of this stuff down. My brother Dave, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Slim. It's the start for me of the maybe best three-week run of sports in the calendar year. Love college basketball playoff time.
Awesome gambling time, I will say that, because there's just so many games that are being played. It's awesome to be able to bet all of them if you want to. And think you know what you're talking about, so you know maybe bet more than you should. So I would caution people on doing that, because I've plenty of times have said this team's a guarantee and they lose. So before we head into the college basketball picks, Dave, and I'm sure you'll have a few good ones. I got a few of my own I'd recommend to people, but the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, yesterday released Joe Mixon. And, or maybe it was today, and they sign Zach Moss. I think that's an underrated signing. Zach Moss has been sharing time over in Indianapolis over the last year or more than that. And I don't think Joe Mixon does anything for Cincy, Dave. So real quick, what do you think about that?
I think Cincinnati has a lot of holes that they need to work on, especially on the D-line, if they want to ascend to the top of the AFC in 2024-25. I don't know if people really know of all the holes that they have. That's why they're trying to make these roster moves now. They got a lot of space. I think they actually have the third most spending money available to them in the NFL. And so, you know, they've already locked up, you know, Joe Burrow. They've got Chase under contract. Yeah, that's why T. Higgins is, you know, mad that they're not spending money on him. I think that's part of his holdout. So I think you're going to see Cincinnati be very active over the next couple of months, and we'll see what kind of shifting they can do. They're a team to keep an eye on with their odds in terms of what they'll be able to accomplish next NFL season.
Exactly. I just think there's no explosion for Joe Mixon. So if Joe Burrow can have a guy back there that actually has explosion, that could just give a new life to the offense. Let's go to the offense of college basketball. I will tell you, unfortunately, 2 days ago, USC, who's my pick to win the Pac-12 tournament, was 40-1. Yesterday, I bet them plus +2950 to win the Pac-12 championship. Today, they're down to plus +2,000 odds. USC's getting bet. What do you think happens out there in the Pac-12? And then, you know, is it Arizona? Because Arizona's, I think, minus -160 to win that tournament. And USC just kicked the crap out of them Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. The last game of the conference season, I think, is one of those crap shoots. You don't know which teams. I mean, Arizona was already locked into the one seed. I don't know how fired up they really were going into that game. So for me, I mean, just with what I've seen out of that conference this year, I think it's a two-team race. I think it's Washington State and Arizona. I wouldn't bet against one of those two teams to win the conference championship. But, you know, there's some value in Washington State, not much in Arizona.
Okay, there we go. What do you think? I mean, as I look at the ACC and these odds, I see North Carolina's plus +150. To win the conference tournament. Duke's plus +160. And I'm like, what are people watching? Dude, if Carolina plays Duke again, Carolina is going to spank them again. They are better than Duke.
Yeah, Carolina, I mean, if Carolina makes it, I think they're to the finals, they're going to win. I mean, they'll be vulnerable maybe in the first game of the tournament once they get into those quarterfinals, because they just won a huge road game at Duke. They won the regular season ACC championship for the first time in 7 years, I think. You know, so they might have a letdown, but that's the game where they're vulnerable. So for me, I like North Carolina when I'm plus +150, and I think they're definitely the best team in the tournament. They have a lot of senior players on that team, so I think they're going to be really focused. So plus +150, I use them in one of my plays. You know, I played a bunch of conference winners. $25, one wins me $7,500 for a four-team wager. And that's part of the reason I love this time of year. You know, small money can win you a lot of money if you know a little bit about basketball.
And
Carolina plus +150, great point.
I'm with you, Dave. And it's like you get days of action on this in all likelihood. You take four teams. I mean, there's multiple day tournament here. You might have to win four games to get to the championship. But if you like a team to win the whole thing, like North Carolina, yeah, they might lose in their opening round game. But in all likelihood, they're going to be extreme favorites and they're going to win that. So you get multiple days of action, too, for that small bet. So what's another one? What's a bigger price one that you actually are into? Because for me, I mean, I like Tennessee. I like Kentucky. I would probably bet Kentucky to win the SEC because they're plus +400. Tennessee's plus +130.
So I use Tennessee because I think Tennessee is, again, a team that's equipped to beat Kentucky. I know they lost to them in the last game of the regular season, but to me, that was all about Tennessee had already beaten Kentucky at Kentucky. Tennessee had already wrapped up the SEC championship. They're coming home, and they're just finishing their season. They're getting ready for their postseason run. I think their guards are very good defensive upperclassmen that match up great against Kentucky. I thought you saw it the last 5 minutes of that game when Tennessee really tightened the screws down when they knew they were going to lose. They almost came back and won. I think Tennessee at plus +130 is another one of those good bets. That's two of my four in this four-team ticket.
Okay, right on. So, I mean, for me, I'm going to play UNC plus the +150, and then I'm going to play Tennessee on one parlay and Kentucky on another, just because the odds will accelerate so greatly when you add multiple teams in. So what are you looking at then afterwards? Well, are you looking at the Big Ten?
So I played two other conferences. I looked at the Big 12 and the Big East.
Okay.
And the Big 12 was the biggest. It was the biggest money line, you know, underdog in my play. But as I looked at the Big 12, Kansas, who I think is the best team when they're fully staffed in that conference, has already said that Dickinson and McCullers are going to be out for the Big 12 conference tourney.
Oh.
So you can remove them from the list. Now, they were still plus 600 or something like that, but I take them out. They're not going to win.
They're 1,400 now, just so you know. They're plus 1,400 now.
Right. So it's adjusting. Then you have Iowa State, and Iowa State is great at home. They're not so great on the road, and I think they're plus 350, 400, something like that, second seed in the conference. I'm like, I don't think they're going to win three games in a row away from home. So it brings me down to two teams, and that's really Baylor and the maybe number one seed overall in the NCAA tournament, the Houston Cougars. And for me, like, I watched them play this year. I feel like Baylor can beat them, and if they end up matching up in the finals, which is what they would, I'll take my chances there with Baylor as an underdog to win that tournament at plus 750.
Very cool, because I had profiled Baylor a couple of weeks ago on this show here saying they have five guys or six guys who all average double digits in scoring, and they can shoot the ball from three nutso. And I think you had said on that day that they just would struggle against a team that has a big dominating inside, because Baylor doesn't really have that type of counter to that presence. But Houston doesn't necessarily have it either, right?
Correct. I think Houston doesn't. That's why I don't think Houston's a bad matchup for Baylor. I think Baylor is maybe a slight underdog in that game. I mean, from what I've seen, I would say Houston should be a plus three, plus or minus three, minus four in terms of the betting line. But Baylor has a puncher's chance, better than a puncher's chance in that matchup.
They'd match up in the finals. Have you looked at that? I haven't looked to see the bracket, like how they would match up.
Yeah, they should be 2-3. So Iowa State and Baylor are 2-3 in the Big 12. And again, like that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for what I think are the best teams to get to that point. And then maybe you get lucky and somebody else happens to take out Houston. Maybe, UConn is the next conference, right? You're going to need some of those teams when you're playing these underdogs in their conferences. You only need them to lose one game. So they got multiple chances to trip up. And then if they don't, hey, maybe you're matching up against them in the finals of those conferences with something on the line.
Okay, so that's 6-1 Baylor. If you're telling me if they squared off in the finals, it's 3 or 4 point game. Money line on Houston would be, you'd be able to cover yourself essentially to say, all right, well, let's take Houston and bet them money line, because for $25, if you can get paid a few thousand dollars, if Baylor happens to pull the upset off, it's worth it to offset things a little bit. So what's the other one you have? You're going against UConn in the Big East?
So yeah, and I think UConn is the best team in the conference. But I will say Marquette has been without Tyler Kolek. He had an abdominal strain, so he's missed some games for them recently. Marquette hasn't looked very good. They lost by 30, I think, when they last played UConn.
Mm-hmm.
Igodoro has also missed some time for them. So that's their two best players. And I'll tell you, Marquette, when they're fully equipped, I think Marquette's one of the 10 teams in the country that actually can win the whole thing. Like they're good. They have a piece. They have everything that you want on a team. They can shoot. They got a big. They play good defense. They got great guards, ball handling. So that is one of those games where I think if Marquette does end up playing against UConn, I think there's a little bit of that, hey, we lost by 30 without our best guys. They ran it off on us. The other thing is I think UConn may be a little bit overrated. I think people, still remember their run last year. I don't think their run last year was as good as a lot of people have given them credit for. They've been great this year, but I don't think that their athleticism and skill set dictates that they're going to go on another 10-game winning streak here and win the Big East Conference and then the NCAA tournament. I just don't see UConn doing that.
That's funny you said that, because I went over to DraftKings at the Filatimo Casino in Manchester yesterday, and I was talking to the guy over there that sells the tickets, and they were saying UConn's the best team in the country. And I was like, well, I know they're the defending champs. I know they're great, but they can't be better than last year because they've lost Jordan Hawkins, who was the best player on that team. That guy's insane. And when you lose a player who can shoot like that and get open like that, like there's no way your team gets better. And they lost that Igodoro guy or whoever he was, one of the big dudes in the middle. So maybe UConn is reloaded, but it's like they're not as good as they were last year. And they had a kind of easy run through the finals last year, honestly.
Yeah, listen, UConn is upperclassmen. Like they got a lot of older players on that team. So Spencer's playing real good. Their best player is probably Castle. I think he comes off the bench for them, or he did at least the majority of the season, unless that's changed recently. He's a freshman. He's a dynamic player. He's definitely going to be a lottery pick for them. If not lottery, I mean, he's going to be a top 15, 16 guy. I think probably lottery pick. But their guys, Newton and Spencer, they run that show. I mean, they're two guys that both upperclassmen, bold, very good shooters. But neither one of them is going to be an NBA. Neither one of them is an NBA prospect. That's why I think they're vulnerable out there.
Right on, Dave. Good insight. We got more of that to come in the week ahead here. The Sports Machine with Slim is done for a Tuesday. WKXL Radio will continue on. 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com.